Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, June the 26th, 2009.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Well, the trade went home early Friday, or at least it sure appeared that way. Is it just the calm before the acreage report storm due Tuesday of next week? We'll try to divine what the USDA lockup will provide today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Midwest Market Solutions' Brian Hoops. Our panelists today in studio are Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois, Matt Bennett of TGM, that's Total Grain Marketing, from Windsor, Illinois, and Matt Payne of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. Well, let's open today's discussion with this question. The break in the market, Matt Bennett, seems to have come earlier than many might have expected. And in the Eastern Corn Belt, there are and have been some overs for both corn and soybeans. So tell me today, are you long-term friendly or bearish the corn market?
Todd, I'd have to say that I'm long-term friendly the corn market based on a variety of factors. The east of the Mississippi, I feel like, the state of the crop isn't near as good as what we're looking at as far as the ratings. I have to feel like this corn market's got a chance to be pretty strong on down the line. I think acreage implications as well are going to factor into that. So I have a hard time not being friendly.
Matt Payne of the Andersons?
Yeah, I just want to echo what Matt is saying. I definitely am friendly as well. I just feel that what the progress that has occurred in the East, we're just not there where we were a year ago. These markets got to go up a little bit.
And Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing.
I would have to agree with these two guys. I think if you just took a snapshot of the market today, with everything we know today, I think I would lean to the friendly side on the new crop corn long term. But there's so much that's coming at this market at this point. I mean, you got the dollar, you have the demand side of it, and the livestock and the ethanol and the economy in general, and I think all those things can change in a heartbeat.
As most of you probably recognized already, Matt Payne is the new person on the panel. We have not had him on Commodity Week before. Matt, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a little something about you?
Well, thanks for letting me come today. I appreciate it. I grew up in Fairmount, Illinois, just east of Champaign, on a corn and soybean farm. We also raise and show registered pulled shorthorn cattle. Before joining the Andersons this year, I was working for Heartland Barge in St. Louis and New Orleans, and I was trading barge and ocean freight globally, and my market was Asia and the Middle East.
Well, maybe you better tell me a little bit more about that. I think we'd like to hear what your view of that coming from the Midwest might be.
Yeah, it's great to be back home and be able to help the local farmers, but just seeing it on a global scale, it totally changes how you see what's going to happen with these commodities, especially fertilizers, watching how one company can control so much of the fertilizer industry is crazy to me. And with the corn and soybeans especially, Asia is buying so much, and then that has backed off so suddenly in the past couple months that we're just seeing it kind of stagnate. I know in the Gulf especially, 2 days ago, they were buying beans at three over the July. Most people don't realize that because it was internal information. But I mean, some of these, the ships, they're waiting for beans and they just aren't down there right now.
So you would be, we'll switch from corn to beans at this point. So you would be near-term friendly, the bean market?
Absolutely. if you've got old beans, I would be watching the markets very closely, because I don't know how much more there is to hold on to, but with 12 buck beans right now, I mean, you can't really go wrong.
No, indeed. Let's stay with that, because we do have the highs, the lows, and the settlements for the week. Remember, we give you the composite trade. That's the overnight, the day trade combined. July soybeans this week had a high of $12.09¾, a low at $11.50½, and a settlement price at $12.02, finished up 22 cents. November at $9.91, down 15. I would have thought most people might think that the bean market didn't have a whole lot left in it, but it appears we have at least one person that does. Bill, would you agree with him?
Well, I guess I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see the beans go up and try these old crop beans, maybe try that $13 area again. The one of the keys, I think, is on the delivery side of it. And if you look at the open interest, it's pretty high in the July. We're a couple of days away from deliveries. And if you assume that the open interest that's in there, the commercials are at least a pretty good part of it, they could take delivery on enough beans to get them down the road away. So that's going to be interesting to see.
You know, you look at the bean market, you've got two different, completely different markets, cash market and the fall delivery market. And I can't help but be friendly to the old beans. I agree with what these guys are saying. There's just not very many of them out there. And I don't know what the upside potential is on them, but I have a hard time believing they're going to fall real suddenly, because there's a lot of need out there for them. You know, you look at the fall beans, though, and it's a completely different story.
Well, give me that different story. What is it, down 15 this week?
Well, I think that was, in my opinion, a microcosm of what could happen with the bean market, because I do think that the acreage is probably going to, you know, have nowhere to go but up, in my opinion, on the beans. And if we have decent weather this summer, I have a real hard time believing that beans aren't going to be, you know, at least a dollar under where we're trading right now. So I'd be doing something to lock in some sort of coverage there.
Matt Payne, you're shaking your head in agreement.
I absolutely agree with what both of them are saying. I think wherever you're delivering to, I'd be locking in your basis right now, because it's gonna weaken, and take advantage of these prices now, because it is going to go down.
So is it possible to lock in a basis-only contract at this point? Can you do that at the Andersons today?
You sure can.
And so, and what was the Andersons paying over on old crop soybeans today?
On old, we're 30 under.
You're 30 under. And
you're 20 under, I apologize.
20 under.
20 under.
But you still think that basis should be locked in at that point?
Absolutely.
All right. Everybody else agree or not?
I think if you can get that done, it's probably not a bad play. But I'm not so sure I wouldn't go ahead and lock in flat prices totally if you can get up into that $10 plus area again. One other thing I think that we got to play the devil's advocate a little bit, going back to what Matt was saying about the China purchases. If you look at the purchases to date for this year, the Chinese have bought about 200 million bushel more than last year. And to me, that's, you know, if they come in here, will they come in here and do that same thing next year? That's a key question, because that could take you from a 150 carryout or a 200 carryout up to a 400 million carryout.
Matt, give us the bigger, broader view on that one.
I agree. You know, this year South America had a really poor crop, and if they have another poor crop, China has nowhere to buy from but us. If they have a great crop, they're going to buy from South America. They always have, and they will continue doing so. So that's going to be a major factor of what our prices do.
A major factor, and so we have to wait and for a long time to figure that one out.
Absolutely.
So let's get back into the corn side of the marketplace at this point. July corn, a high of 399, a low at 376¾. A settlement price down 15 cents at 384¼ for the July. December at 404¼, down 15¼. Matt, I don't recall whether you follow the text very much. I was looking at the daily chart on the continuation, so it's the July at the moment. And if you go back from the most recent high, you can count a 60-cent move from 450 roughly down to 480, right? And there's an exhaustion gap on the day, or there's a halfway gap on that. And then I guess, would you call that an exhaustion gap this week and base building? And what happens on Tuesday?
Well, yes, basically I agree with what you're saying. Now, whenever I look at the corn market, I feel I usually try to talk a little bit more fundamentals. In my opinion, that's what I base myself upon. Whenever I look at what this corn market's done in the last few trading sessions, though, if you look at it technically, it looks like it's trying to decide whether it's going to break out to the downside or break back up. Now, I have the tendency to believe that based on a variety of factors, I have a hard time believing that the breakout's going to be to the downside. I just feel strongly that going into this report, regardless of what it says, there's several different things that jump out to me that we will not break out to the downside. I have a hard time not being bullish.
So give me those fundamental factors.
Fundamental factors, I think, the biggest one, of course, is acreage. And I think whenever you really get down and look at what, you know, the average planting date. Now, granted, west of Mississippi, it went in great. But, you know, when you look east of the Mississippi, there's a lot of corn acreage on highly productive land that didn't get in until the last week of May, maybe first week of June. I mean, how much of it was preventive planting? I don't know. But like Matt was saying a little bit earlier, there's a lot of corn that's yet to be planted, a lot of corn that guys are still planting. And last year, I've said this several times, last year we were bailed out by a perfect summer weather scenario, and we can't assume that that's going to happen again. Last year, if we wouldn't have had perfect weather, our yield would have been significantly lower because we had such a stressful spring. We had a stressful spring again this year east of Mississippi.
So in spite of acreage, whether it's bigger or not, you're saying that the late planting date could very well cause a problem.
It has to be factored in. Now, I'm not saying that we're not going to trend a little bit lower. It's always a possibility. I mean, anything can happen in this market. But whenever I look at what could possibly happen, I have a hard time discounting the fact that we had such a stressful spring. If you just take a drive around right now and you look at cornfields east of the Mississippi and many places, this week was pretty tough on them because there's a lot of compaction issues. Guys had to rush. I had to rush. I mean, this was not an easy spring to get the crop out.
Other fundamental factors, Bill, and you can give me either bearish or bullish ones.
Well, I think obviously the acres are important. We're going to get that one plugged in here on Tuesday. The next thing you got to look at is yield, as Matt was mentioning, and if you maybe the USDA tipped their hand a little bit. They had 153.4 in June compared to 153.9 last year. So, you know, a little bit lower, assuming maybe that they're saying that the spring was a little bit worse than last year. But just keep in mind that the largest August yield that we've ever seen is 155. And I really can't see how they're, you know, how it could be larger than that. So the August report, when we get the first numbers in there, I think are going to show some fairly tight carryout numbers.
There's fairly tight carryout, but it only depends on what demand is, both export and domestically. Tell me about the livestock sector in general. How bad is it hurt? And even if we have a shorter crop, will it make that big a difference in the livestock sector?
I think it'll have an impact in the livestock sector just because farmers, are still recovering from high prices of corn last year. I know a lot of farmers that, you know, they had to cut back on their inputs and what they put into their daily production and to all aspects of the livestock sector. And with these prices now recovering to a more normal level, I think farmers will be able to recover a little bit more than they were able to last year for sure.
Very quickly, if each of you have acreage numbers for both corn and soybeans, could you pass them on to me? Maybe, Matt, we can start with you. Do you have those numbers in front of you?
No, I don't, sir.
Okay. Matt Bennett?
Well, I have a hard time believing on corn that we're going to be over, I'm saying 83 or under. I don't have a real good feeling on beans as I do corn, though.
I'd say 83 on the corn and about 79 on the beans, pretty close to Informer's numbers.
Here's the way some of the rest of the numbers in Chicago finished up for the week. In the wheat pit, July had a high of $5.55, a low at $5.28, a settlement price down 21 cents at $5.34 for the harvest month, and the July 2010 contract at $6.26. Finished 21 and a quarter lower. July oats at 209 and a quarter were down 2 3/4. On the livestock side at the CME Group, nearby June contract and the live cattle an 82.55 top, a bottom at 80.90. The settlement price there at 82.47.5, a $1.55 higher. And the August feeders at 98.97.5, 87.5 cents higher. that in Chicago. July lean hogs, 61.50 for the high, the low at 56.60. And July lean hogs settled at 56.70. They finished down $4.72.5. In just a couple of minutes, we'll talk with Brian Hoops. He's with Midwest Market Solutions out of Yankton, South Dakota. In studio with us as a reminder today are Matt Bennett of TGM, that's Total Grain Marketing, out of Windsor, Illinois, Matt Payne of the Andersons out of Champaign, Illinois, and Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media.
Hi, this is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. The end of our fiscal year is just a few days away. The dollars you contribute today will help keep WILL in touch with you and your concerns, bringing you the news, in-depth weather, and agricultural market analysis. As we work to raise the remaining money by the end of June, please do what you can. Call us at 217-244-9455 or log on to WILLpledge.org. Todd Gleason and I thank you.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Hot, humid weather spread across Illinois and the Midwest this week as the axis of an upper-level ridge of high pressure extended northward through the Midwest. Temperatures this week averaged 7 to 8 degrees above normal throughout Illinois, a big contrast to the cooler first 2.5 weeks of the month. There were a few high temperature records this week as temperatures soared into the 90s, but most of the records this week were record high minimum temperatures. Very humid air with dew points in the 70s most of the week kept overnight low temperatures in the low to mid-70s. For most of the week, showers and thunderstorms were widely scattered across Illinois. However, where the rain did fall, it often was heavy as storms moved slowly in the weak upper-level flow. There were several flash flood warnings issued this week as a result of the localized heavy rain. On Wednesday afternoon, a line of storms developed in Cook County along the lake freeze coming off of Lake Michigan, dropping heavy rain and resulting in some wind damage. The heat and humidity should break late this weekend as a strong cold front moves through Illinois Saturday night and Sunday. An upper-level low is forecast to stall out over the Great Lakes next week, and that will keep cooler air over Illinois for much of next week. Showers and thunderstorms will accompany the front through Illinois this weekend. After that, scattered showers are possible the rest of the week, especially in the northern half of the state, as Illinois remains under the influence of the cool, unstable air associated with the upper low. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
You're listening to the June 26th edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason, our panelist in studio today, Matt Bennett of TGM out of Windsor, Illinois, Matt Payne of the Andersons from Champaign, Illinois, and Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois. Our guest hails from Yankton, South Dakota, and Midwest Market Solutions. Thanks for joining us, Brian Hoops. We appreciate you being with us today.
Well, thanks for having me on, Todd. I appreciate the invitation.
If you could key in on exactly the right numbers for the Tuesday morning acreage reports, I'd like you to do that for me, please.
Well, wouldn't everybody like to know exactly those numbers?
That's right. So what's your number?
Well, we're in the camp that we're going to see a little bit of a reduction in corn acres, but not a huge amount. You know, the trade's looking for 828,000, I think, less. And, you know, we're right in that ballpark. About 750,000 is what we're expecting to come in less. So I think there was some more aggressive planting of some corn acres, and I don't know that all that many got shifted out. So we'll be looking for those corn acres to come in pretty much in line with expectations. Bean acres, certainly think we're going to have a little bit more. I'm sure there's going to be some surprises out there. Somebody's going to get disappointed in this report because the ranges are pretty wide in both the corn and the beans, but I'd look for bean acres up around that 2 million mark, and just don't think there was that many shifted from corn to beans.
Yeah, Brian, Bill Mayer. We had a discussion here in an earlier part of the show about the livestock demand. you know, the USDA's dropped it pretty substantially from 2 years ago and even last year. With livestock prices where they're at, what's your take on the corn demand going into the 09-10 year?
Well, you know, I think for the demand base, it's going to continue to erode here for the near term. We have less cattle, less hogs on feed. We'll have less poultry, chickens, turkeys on feed. So your overall feed demand, I think it continues to ratchet down here for a while. You know, next 3 to 4 months, probably see some more liquidation in the livestock sector. There's feedlots in the western part of the Corn Belt that we visit with. Cattle feedlots, I'm saying, are pulling back on some of their numbers, tightening the reins until profitability returns. You know, same thing in the hog market. A lot of some of these bigger producers are having their facilities sit empty or skipping turns in their rotations right now because of the unprofitability of the marketplace. So it may take another 3, 4, 5, 6 months even before we start to factor all that in and USDA catches up with that. I think they have done a good job coming down with the demand. Probably going to have to reduce feed demand even further in the next couple months.
Hey, this is Matt Payne. Just wanted to switch gears just slightly. What do you feel like in regards to the forecast for the conditions that we have here in the East? What do you think the market's going to do with that come the report?
You know, I think for conditions, I can speak for the West where we're at. You know, they're ideal for the most part. You've got corn, you know, we're certainly growing, beans growing. Heat is exactly what we needed. You know, in the Western Belt, it's a little harder to get a whole handle on for me because, I don't see that on a daily basis. But from what we hear for producers in the Eastern Belt, there's certainly some crop that's going to be planted late and you're going to have to extend the growing season. I think what was the key for the Western Corn Belt last year, and it's almost a reverse. The Western Corn Belt was real wet last year, parts of it anyway. Eastern Corn Belt too wet this year, and they both had delayed plantings. Is the Western Belt last year, it was a cooler type summer. We extended the growing season, did not have an early frost, and that really allowed those yields, the corn, to reach full maturity. And I think that's what's going to be the key for this year for the Eastern Corn Belt. We're going to have to stay fairly cool, not get the extreme temperatures, but extend the growing season so we do not have any type of an early frost. You're going to be hard-pressed to repeat what happened last year, but some of the forecasts that I've listened to have exactly that, a little bit cooler. Well, at least 3 weeks here where it's going to be warm. Then it cools off again and becomes pretty moderate, almost an average type of growing season.
Brian, I agree that west of the Corn Belt, everyone says it's an ideal condition. East of the Corn Belt is far from ideal. Whenever you think about, if we come in here with an 83 million acre corn planting, how much room for error do we have on weather? And obviously, with your guys sitting in an ideal condition, you're probably going to be giving a little different recommendation to a guy that's sitting in a not so ideal, condition. So what would your advice be to a guy that's trying to market his crop this year, especially if he's sitting in our area, in our neck of the woods, where things are a little bit sketchy? Because my opinion, I guess, would be that we don't have a whole lot of room for weather problems this summer, given the acreage and given, what the condition of the corn crop is in such a large part of the Midwest.
Yeah, it's interesting because if you look at the USDA numbers, we're well above last year's crop condition ratings, so like 10% at least greater than what we were last year. We were in that same boat as what the Eastern Corn Belt producers are in this year. We were experiencing last year concerns, would we have that crop? We want to sell ahead because the prices are good, but are you going to be able to receive enough yield to even meet what you've pre-sold? So there's a lot of similarities, and I think there is a little bit of room for error, here. Not as much because we are going to reduce acres from last year. We're going to have to buy acres next year going into 2010 to rebuild the ending stocks. But with the demand base falling, it's a situation where we can have a little bit of error in this growing season. Most likely we're going to have some of that in the Eastern Corn Belt. The Western Corn Belt will probably make up for some of the shortfall, but it's up to Mother Nature and how long we extend this growing season before we'll really be able to determine how good the yield is going to be in the Eastern Corn Belt.
Globally, wheat is one of the crops that most nations keep
a really good handle on. Can you tell us how harvest is proceeding and when you think a low might be into that marketplace?
Well, typically we have a low right around the first part of July, so we're getting very close on the calendar. The problem is winter wheat harvest is slow this year. We've been delayed getting out of the chute because of maturity. We were delayed on some spring rains and some harvest concerns. Now we're starting to pick up, and this week it looks like we'll make some good harvest progress. A lot of times you make that low between July 1 and August 1, and I think it's probably going to come in the last half of that of the month of July, or closer to the August 1 time frame than it would be July 1. We have a huge carryout, and we're going to have big quarterly stocks, well over double what we saw last year on Tuesday's report. That's always going to keep a lid on some of these rally attempts that we have. We haven't seen the demand really creep back into the U.S. wheat at a time that it should. We have plenty of global stocks for wheat. I'm afraid wheat is going to be subject to what the U.S. dollar is doing and what the corn and bean markets are doing to a large extent. And, we're going to be down in acres this year, but it may take another 6 to 9 months before we start to build a bullish case off of that news.
All right. What do you feel like our opportunities are for our U.S. Wheat exports?
I don't think they're all that great. You know, right now we should be building and starting to ship some of those export businesses. These foreign countries typically come to the United States in this time of the year, late June, early to mid-July, start booking their needs because they want freshly harvested wheat right off the combine, shipped from port directly to them instead of going into the storage facility. We haven't seen that. We haven't seen much in the way of demand, though. We haven't seen Egypt come in and buy any wheat. In fact, Egypt bought French wheat this week. So I think your export forecast is pretty limited to USDA. I think it's at 950 million bushels, somewhere in that range. They're probably going to have to back that off a little bit in here unless we get a foreign competitor of ours, Argentina, or the Ukraine or someone else to have a major crop problem. That's when these foreign buyers will turn back to the United States, shift away from these other countries, and that's what's going to take to ignite a demand-led type market here in the United States.
We've talked a great deal here about the acreage report, which is due out Tuesday, but there's also a quarterly grain stocks report. What do you see in the numbers there?
You know, our firm doesn't put those out, but looking at these numbers, the corn number, it's certainly going to be a large number. I don't think you're going to see any real surprises there. Maybe the feed demand has backed off enough that we actually move those quarterly stocks above what the average trade guess is, but it should probably fall in the range. Bean stocks, much tighter than what they were a year ago, and wheat stocks are going to be more than double, over 670 million bushels total versus, I think, 306 last summer. So wheat stocks have really rebuilt just in 1 year, while soybean stocks have moved lower, and maybe the bean stocks are going to be even a little bit lower than what we thought due to the strong crush numbers and the strong export sales.
Brian, we thank you for joining us today.
All right. Thanks for having me on, Todd.
Brian Hoops is with Midwest Market Solutions. He's based in Yankton, South Dakota. Now, final word from our panelist in studio. We'll start with you, Matt Bennett of TGM.
I think it's going to be pretty interesting to see the acreage numbers this week, and I would say watch the weather forecast pretty close, and let's just buckle up for a wild ride.
And Matt Payne of the Andersons?
I agree with Matt as well. I'd just like to add, too, that I'd recommend holding on to your old corn and roll it on to the SEP.
And Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing.
Just a point of information, the Chicago markets on the grains are going to expand on July 1st, next Wednesday, to 7:15 on the overnight markets.
Thanks much to all our panelists. You've been listening to Commodity Week. It is a production of Illinois Public Media on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a great and a good marketing week.